Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Human Technology Podcast. When I made the last episode before the summer break, I announced that I will be back in late September. It is still somehow mid-September, but I attended two events in the past week that I find super exciting, and I just wanted to talk about this, and this is why I restart into the regular publication of episodes mid-September instead of late September. I hope you don't mind. I'm sure you won't mind this because you will be waiting for fresh news out of the human technology world, and I'll be giving you that. To be honest, I have not yet had a summer vacation. That will be in October. But I have been working intensely on a couple of different topics, different things. Especially, I made quite some progress on my next book. It is far from being complete, but I'm continuously working on this, and I made great progress over the past weeks. It will be on automotive user interface design, so I'm putting all my academic knowledge, all the experiences I have into a book. Plus, and that was for me the most emotional, the most exciting moment of the summer, I was awarded as a honorary professor at the Fachhochschule Aachen, the University of Aachen. And I'm deeply honored by this. And this is not a job. This is not a paid position, but it's an volunteering position or an honorary position. They recognize what I have done in the automotive user interface domain and the human technology domain. And yes, I'm pretty proud that they selected me and gave me this position to become part of the professorship team of the university, and to have a solid basis for the next years to teach my students, to have them working on PhD thesis, on diploma thesis, on master's thesis, on bachelor thesis in the next years. And yes, I'm just wanted to let you know. For this one, it is two topics I want to discuss. And since I found out that I have tons of material, I will split this in two. It will be about the IFA 2025 and the IAA 2025. The IFA 2025 is at Berlin. It is the Internationale Funkausstellung, is the original name of it, which is based on the very old time. It had its 100th anniversary last year. So IFA, Internationale Funkausstellung, International Radio Exhibition. And it's not so much on radio anymore. There's hardly any traditional radio anymore. There's a lot of wireless data transfer at the moment. So they changed the name to Innovation for All. They're using the same IFA abbreviation, but call this Innovation for All, which means it's pretty well. I was there last week on Monday, and last week Friday I was at the IAA, the Internationale Automobilausstellung, the International Vehicle or Car Exhibition at Munich. I attended these two events within 1 week, and I thought I'd make one episode about both. Found out tons of material, a lot of things to talk and think about, so I will split it in two. And my friend Thomas Villinger-Kund, he asked, will you be Weißwurst or Currywurst? Will you be white sausage or curry sausage? Weißwurst stands for Munich, meaning you attend the IAA, the International Automobile Show. Or are you more curry sausage, which is a more typical dish out of northern Germany, particularly Berlin? That was the IFA, the Innovation for All. And I attended both, so I had both. I had Weißwurst and Currywurst. What I will do is I will compare both shows also with the CES, which for me is still the benchmark show globally. If it's about innovation, if it's about mobility, if it's about technology, if it's about, yeah, all the exciting new things that are coming there. So this is what I do. I'm going to talk about these two shows, and I will compare it with the CES whenever I believe it makes some more sense. So this week, it's the Innovation for All, the Berlin show about electronics and consumer products. Next episode in 2 weeks will then be automotive focused, when I will talk about the IAA, the International Car Exhibition, a car show at Munich. Berlin, once again, as I said, the show is 100 years old, became the heartbeat of the tech world. 5 days with manufacturers, with retailers. There's a very strong focus on retailers at the IFA. There are separate show areas where you can enter only as a retailer, where you can make business, where you can meet business partner. There's a lot of media attention, and there is tons of tech enthusiasts, which also means it's not a 100% professional show, opposed to the IAA, which in large parts was 100% professional. Here you have users as well on board. You have people that are interested. I want to buy a new washing machine. I want to buy a new refrigerator. I want to learn what is new in smart home to maybe upgrade my own home to a smart home. These tech enthusiasts and these regular users, they're also part of the show. And it is in Berlin. It is in the central Berlin exhibition area, which is around the Funkturm, the radio tower, at the western end of downtown Berlin, let's call it this way. Tons of trends, tons of business deals. Super interesting to see that. After a growth in recent years from the back full force in 2023 after the Corona pandemic, we had the 100 year edition last year with 215,000 visitors, and this year the show floor was sold out very well in advance, so it was packed. All the exhibition halls, I think it was an all over of almost 20 of them, were fully packed with exhibitors. I will talk about the detailed figures a little later. For industry insiders, the trade fair is more than a gadget showcase. It is a barometer of a trend barometer. Where are we going to? What is the mood in the industry? What is the thinking in the industry? It's about deal making. Yeah. It is a dealmaker's fair, and it is an indicator, an early indicator of how consumers and home appliances, home technologies will evolve over the next 12, 15, 18 months. It's about what AI features are coming, how do smart home ecosystems look like, what are new form factors for different devices? What are new health-related devices? All this is shown there. And I will summarize a couple of the key figures. I will look at the core topics and I will let you know what I believe are the three most important things to talk about. Let's compare with the CES. Is the IFA, the Innovation for All, is this the German version of the CES? And Las Vegas is regarded as the global leading trade fair for consumer electronics and digital innovation. IFA in Berlin establishes itself more and more as the European counterpart. Both events provide a stage for major product announcements, show trends, offer business opportunities, but have, from my feeling, a slightly different focus. The CES is more technology-driven, often presenting visionary prototypes, concepts, being very advanced. Well, the IFA is traditionally a little closer to the end customer, to the user, to what is there on the market or short before the market introduction. So things that are shown there are more market-ready products opposed to concepts and visions and ideas. In addition, the IFA is located in Europe, and so it is appealing to trade visitors from the region, both Eastern Europe and Western Europe. There's a small group of people from Asia, a small group of people from the US, but it's more focused on Europe. While the CES, of course, is focused North American, and in the past years, more into Asian markets again. To summarize this, both fairs, both exhibitions act as pace setters for consumer and household electronics with different emphasis and being somehow complementary. Couple of key figures in 2025. This year's the show was in Berlin, as every year. It was from September 5 to 9. And as I already said, the show floor was completely sold out. 1,900 exhibitors from 49 countries, about 190,000 square meters exhibition space, which is about 1.9 million square feet, which is the complete fairground, the complete exhibition area in Berlin. Roughly 220,000 visitors, which is more than last year. It's not the highest ever, but it is more than last year's. And last year, 250,000 visitors were from 138 countries and about 1,800 exhibitors. In the year before, in 2023, about 182 visitors from 138 countries. More than 2,000 exhibitors. They had a smaller average exhibition size at that time in the more than 20 halls. 22, after the pandemic, there was almost 240,000 visitors, almost 2,000 exhibitors. And that was the biggest probably ever as some kind of Corona revenge show. That's how I see it. So that was a comparably high number of visitors. So after restart in 2022, the IFA has consolidated its role as Europe's largest consumer and home tech event. 2023 remarked the back full in force moment. 2024, sharp jump in visitors compared to 2023. And in 2025, 1,900 exhibitors, sold out showground. More growth will be hard to realize there in Berlin. The IFA has played an important role for decades in both the traditional and new product groups. Household appliances, refrigerators, stoves, ovens, washing machines, tumblers, whatever. Yeah, manufacturers beyond that regularly present innovations, particularly energy efficiency, sustainability, but also in connectivity. TV, large focus on TVs, audio electronics, that has always been the showcase for latest developments in picture and sound quality, in display technologies, new formats, new devices, new technologies. Smartphone and wearables, fitness gadgets are gaining more and more traction. They go more and more into focus, and things like battery life, like everyday usability, like use cases for normal users, integration into digital ecosystems. How do I integrate all this into my digital life? All these are focus points. So this year there was a separate hall for wearables and fitness devices. Very interesting things they show. Compared to the CES, mobility topics traditionally have a weaker profile at the IFA. In Las Vegas, entire halls are filled with car manufacturers, with suppliers, startups, service companies presenting their visions of connected, autonomous, electric mobility. In Berlin, mobility plays a role, but it's only a minor role. There was one and a half halls with things like electric golf cars, electric scooters. So the focus in Berlin is more on consumer electronics, household appliances, smart home solutions, more in that area. All right, so let's move on to the three product groups that catched my attention at the IFA. The first one are wearables or fitness devices. The second one, different kinds of robots. And the third one is smart homes. Let's start with the wearables, the fitness devices. Devices like smart glasses, smart rings, were one of the focus points of the IFA. Now, smart glasses promise to bring information directly into the field of view with augmented reality technologies, complementing or partially replacing traditional displays. Also, all of them have cameras in there. Most of them have loudspeakers in there. So you have this new device you can wear in your face that projects directly into your eyes, but also records. And for me, this is one of the big question marks here. Google had the Google Glasses out there a few years ago, and they failed. And one of the reasons why they failed was that if you sit together with someone in a cafe, in a restaurant that is wearing one of these glasses, you always ask yourself, is he or she recording everything? Is he or she streaming our first date into the internet? You know, what's happening here? What is happening with all this data that is collected there? So smart glasses, pretty cool thing, but still questionable for me. Will they find large acceptance? In addition, practicality. Are they really that easy? They're pretty heavy. I had a couple of them in my face. I wore a couple of them. And even after 2-3 minutes, you find out that is a pretty heavy set of glasses I'm wearing. They look pretty ugly, to be honest. I have a couple of glasses and I like to wear them and I like to look cool with them. Smart glasses are super uncool. Then last point, battery life. How long will they really last? All these are open points are still open questions. Another product group were fitness and control rings, so rings you put on your finger. Most of them are measurement devices. Yeah, they measure directly on your body surface, on your skins, heart rates and sweat production and muscle tension. So you can use that for health monitoring. But also some of them had the ability to control devices, like controlling your smartphone, controlling external devices. It is a very, very small, very subtle kind of interaction that you have. You wear this ring and you don't have something in front of your face. You can use the ring, maybe haptic only, not looking at it, which makes it maybe a pretty cool interaction device. Both categories, smart glasses and fitness rings, illustrate the trend of bringing technology closer to humans, to the surface of our bodies, onto our skins. The open question is, which of these concepts are new and exciting, which are envisioned, and where is the practical solution? Where are the real use cases for that? And if we talk about use cases, me as an automotive HMI guy, I was asking myself, hey, can we use this inside a car? What are the use cases of smart glasses and even more fitness rings and maybe even fitness wristbands and smart watches if you are in the car? And these variables can be used to collect data and enrich the in-cabin sensing, the driver monitoring part in driving. So we are heading more and more towards shared driving tasks. So some part of the driving task is performed by the human, some other parts are performed by the rolling robot. And that changes dynamically depending on the traffic situation, on the available data, on the weather. So there may be a switch, and particularly the situation when you have to switch a task from the car to the human. That is a critical moment because you have to know, is the user in a condition where he or she is able to take over? And then we get down to in-cabin sensing and driver monitoring. So pulse, heart rate variability, other stress indicators can help to detect, is this driver ready to take over? Is he or she sleeping? Is there an overall fatigue there? Is an information overload already there? So in what condition is the driver? And integrate that into the vehicle, into the adaption of driver assistance systems, into the HMI. Yeah? Is a person maybe highly stressed? Then I will not add additional information to the HMI. Or is a person super relaxed and easy information processing, then I can add some more information to the HMI. This is all possible, and this is what I see. You can adapt the air condition, you can adapt the light systems, you can adapt the sound system in a car to raise comfort, to raise driver awareness, to raise or to lower driver fatigue. Yeah, so we can also have opportunities for individualized HMIs, that the HMIs adapt to the person, but also to the concrete situation, the concrete status a human is in while it sits in a car, and then adapt the HMI accordingly, to create safer, more comfortable, more sustainable driving experience. Of course, we have risks in that. There's the data protection, the data sovereignty. Who owns the data? Who gets to know about the data? Who will know what my heartbeat is when I drive into downtown Berlin? Maybe I don't want to know anyone to know this. And then the question is, who gets it to know? The protection of personal health data is always a very sensitive, very sensible thing. That's super private and that's super personal, and that's something I don't want to let anyone else. What is my health status? If it gets critical, of course, I want to get an ambulance. But before that, it's my private stuff. I don't want to know anything. Another point, there is already a high cognitive load and high interaction load on the drivers. So we have the danger of overwhelming the driver with too many signals, too many interactions, too many things that are happening and that must be done or should be done. So we get the information overload, we get the driver overload. So at the end, striking the right balance between useful support and maintaining autonomy is essential, and keeping driving safe but not overloading drivers. And if we get this done, we can build a technology that is extremely helpful and adds value to vehicle interiors. Second big point, robots. Robots were pretty present. Very different forms were showcased at the IFA. Humanoid robots with human-like proportions. They looked like moving moving humans with faces, with movements. I saw one of these robots which tried to look exactly like a human and which pushed me deeply into the uncanny valley, this moment when you believe this robot is too realistic to be robot only, but it's not human. And that is super creepy. That is the situation when you believe, oh, I don't want to see this thing. I don't want to have this. This is the uncanny valley. And there was one example I can remember where I stood there and said, no, this is too creepy to be realistic. But the, let's say, more robot-style robots, the humanoid robots, were presented as a service robot for receptions, for communication tasks, for whatever. Then there were these, what I call the semi-humanoid robots. So they have only parts that are anthropomorphic, like, for example, arms, which are somehow human. And the rest of the robot is clearly a rolling box or a rolling ton, something that is moving around on wheels and does something. And you have these either arms or maybe faces that are pretty realistic. And they were meant primarily, for example, for healthcare. Yeah, we have working environments that are optimized for us humans working in them. And so a lot of things, and we don't realize this because it's so natural and has always been like this, but many things are ideally designed to be used by humans with our arm lengths, with our leg lengths, with the forces we can use with our hands, with our hand sizes. So there's a lot designed for that. And if you have a robot working this and it has a human style arm with the human proportions in it, you don't need to change the environment. Yeah? If you have a robot which is totally different with much larger hands or 10 fingers or whatever, then it will be difficult to get a good fit between the robot and the environment. Yeah, and so you have this in certain environments where you say, okay, I want to have some human style elements and components in the robot. And then I saw a lot of non-humanoid robots. They are functionally designed to perform specific tasks, like vacuum cleaner or lawn mowers, like logistic helpers, kitchen assistants. All these are specific robots designed for one thing, optimized for one thing, and they don't look like humans. You will never come up with the idea to believe that a Mon Loa robot is somehow human. Yeah? You will not treat this device as human. This range demonstrated that robotics is less visionary, but than on other trade fairs, but more practical. It is more just like, we have these applications, the specific here, and a lot of that was linked to everyday applications. As much as I was impressed by the diversity of robots at the IFA, the central question is, where are the use cases? Now, what are the concrete use cases for these robots? Many of these humanoid or semi-humanoid models are more like technological demonstrations. Yeah? It's not so much a market-ready solution that solves something, but we can do this. Yeah? We are able to do this or that. And I'm missing the clear day relevance a bit. So do we really need a robot to greet a visitor in a hotel? Yeah? Or do we need a humanoid robot to serve drinks? At an American restaurant, I had a robot. I was served by a robot that was not even semi-humanoid. This was more just like a non-humanoid robot, and that just brought me my plate. Yeah, but my food. That is okay. Yeah, but do we need some humanoid robot to do this? The question arises whether existing solutions like conventional household appliances are good enough. Or do we need a specialized machine in this one? Yeah, and this is a certain tension that I felt is And on one side, there is a technological potential that is absolutely visible and that is realized, that is absolutely fascinating. And on the other side, what are the real demands? What are the real use cases? How can we make human lives better? How can we make the world a better place with robots? Last point, smart homes. Smart homes, again, were a major focus at the IFA. It started with connected solutions, emphasizing comfort, energy, efficiency, security. This is all part of it, from intelligent heating, lighting systems, connected kitchen appliance, security appliance for children, for pet, and for homes. For me, it was clear the term smart home has not a clear definition. It is interpreted very differently. Some providers advertise with a single app controlled light switch as a smart home device. You have a light switch, maybe you have two of them, and you have an app and you can turn on and off the light from your smartphone. And okay, yeah, somehow cool thing, somehow useful. But is this really a smart home? Yeah, because other showcases were complex ecosystems with AI-backed, AI-powered automation that proactively thinks and acts. The AI knows when I will come home and what mood I will be, and so will I need some loud heavy metal music when I come into my home? Will I need a warm and full bathtub with some nice gentle music in that? So what do I need it when I come at home? And my home prepares for this. It's proactive and acts to please me. Yeah, the IFA showed the full spectrum, from simple entry-level solutions to highly connected AI-driven integrated systems. Question remains, what is the usability? What is the interoperability between these different things? And basically, how useful is it? Let's get back to the question, what is a smart home? What is a smart home device? Too often, just a light switch with an app was mentioned as smart, which I believe is not really a smart home. So for me, a true smart home is when devices communicate with each other, so when my refrigerator talks to my oven, when my pet gives me information to my smartphone, and then also makes autonomous decisions. When will heating be turned on? When will blinds be going down? When will be lights in which condition, bright or dark? Will I be there or not, depending on the weather, on energy consumption? From my belief, if we get a real value out of this, this is only possible with the full integration and full automation of all these devices. And the path from a connected, single connected device to a true smartphone, a smart home, is not fully taken everywhere. Plus the fact, who is in charge to do this? If you build a new house, then it is clear you can integrate the smart home technologies fully into this, including all the communication cables and computing power that you need can all be integrated right away. What do you do with existing houses? And here in Europe, houses are built to last 50 to 100, 150 years. So we have a lot of old stone houses here. And who's taking responsibility for this? Who is the master of driving this one? And if you want to have, electric window blinds, yeah, of course. Who's that will be connected to the internet that you can steer from your smartphone when you travel, when you're away from your home. Who is responsible for this one, for the connectivity? I mean, there is a guy that will bring the blinds. Maybe he has electric blinds that have a motor in them. Yeah, but who is in charge of connecting that one to the internet and making this one a complete, fully working service that delivers real value? So for me, this is the major open point in smart homes. And then at the end, what is the real value? What are the real use cases? Do we really need another app to dim the lights? Or is there more on this? Yeah, can we increase safety? Can we support elderly at home? Yeah, and for me, the thing is, we are still in smart homes more on the technical gimmick side that have some use cases that are somehow artificial to me, yeah, that are created to have something. But the true promise of smart homes should be to noticeably ease relevant everyday challenges. And yes, I see the industry on the right way, but we are not fully there. All right, so this was my episode on the eFarm, the Innovation for All in Berlin. And I talked about the show in general. I talked about the comparison to the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show at Las Vegas. And I talked about three product groups: wearables and fitness devices, robots, and smart homes. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.